Hello, everybody, and welcome to another very, very special episode.
No, not for another 15 minutes.
Not for another 15 minutes?
Or dig 20, or whenever Tom gets here.
So an almost very special
episode. Soon-to-be special episode.
Soon-to-be upcoming.
Yes.
Episode of MDG Potpourri.
I'm Conley Woods. I was mostly trying to stall him from saying the name of a podcast as long as possible, and he still remembered, so now I'm ashamed.
I'm 100% sure that if I forgot the name of the podcast in a 20-second stall, like, I shouldn't be podcasting. That sounds like a mental disorder, like some sort of disease of the mind, like maybe I should, you know, get checked into.
That's fair. And just so everyone is aware, Tom is currently not here. He'll be joining the podcast a little later on when he puts his screaming baby to sleep.
Yeah, he sounded hopeful. I was talking to him a little bit earlier today, so hopefully the family settles down. But otherwise, you have the dynamic duo here, the Wonder Twins, if you will.
I would prefer not talk about my breasts that way.
I was talking about you and I, Conley, as in two girls. Not your groups.
I don't know if I would ever associate myself with you in that sort of way, but I guess if we're going that direction, then sure.
Okay. That's fair.
All right, what are we talking about today?
So we don't want to steal Tom's thunder if Tom shows up, but we do have a little event happening soon. You might be familiar with it. It's called Grand Prix Orlando.
I'm well familiar with Grand Prix Orlando, as I am the reigning Grand Prix Orlando champion, my friend.
That's right. We're expecting a run back.
Expecting. It's super easy to do that. It is limited, so obviously it depends a lot on my pool. I've been getting some horrific, like, awful stinkers, wouldn't wipe your butt with them because they would hurt, pools recently. I would say the last, like, four limited GPs I've gone to, including the team one, we just had no chance of doing anything, and it was awful, so I'm really hoping to just get, like, an average to above average pool and be able to actually make a shot at it, because I would like to get the year off to a good start. And obviously, winning back-to-back GP Orlandos would be insane. It would be awesome. And then it also kind of builds a lot of good momentum going into the Pro Tour, which is always nice.
Yeah, I'm super excited because I'm in Orlando here, been here a full day already, but I'll be all the way through the Grand Prix doing some text coverage. So really excited to kind of get a first look at what's going on in Sealed, kind of the format that I really enjoy. And I'm definitely going to be playing a lot of that. My buddies are looking forward to playing in the limited Pro Tour pre-qualifiers, whatever they are, Pro Tour qualifiers. So I want to make sure I can help them and be well-equipped. So looking into Sealed is exciting for me. Of course, Draft is amazing. We're going to have that. This weekend, as the Grand Prix fires, the previous events are going to hit Magic Online, so pretty much everybody who hasn't had a reason to draft is going to start. So let's talk a little bit about... I guess it's a little hard to talk about Sealed, given that every pool is kind of like its own puzzle.
There's a couple things to know about Sealed. Nothing too specific, because it's a very open format, but these gold/multicolor sets are quite unique when it comes to Sealed. People don't know often what to do with them. Generally, when you open your Sealed deck, you sort everything into color piles, and then you kind of go through and weed out any like really unplayable cards, and then you examine what you have left. But when you have a lot of multicolor cards, that could be kind of a pain, because there's just bajillions of piles. So basically, for this particular set, I think the easiest way to do it is to separate into piles and guilds, and then have an unaffiliated pile for anything like Winter Flame or Ride Down or anything that can be played in multiple guilds. Keep that in its own pile, and there won't be too many of those, artifacts included. And then include any banner within its own guild. So basically, you can have 10 base piles, and you want, you know, your blue cards, your black cards, etc. Then you want your Ardu cards, your Teamer cards, anything that's like actually triple colored and belongs to that guild, because that's what most of the cards are. They're not too many double colored. And then from that base, try to build your deck, because if you're looking at like Abzan, and you're like, okay, I got some pretty good Abzan cards, you can immediately go down and look at what are my good black, green, and white cards, and do they work out? Nope. Okay, let's move on to, but the green cards are, and the green and the black cards are really good, so maybe there's something there. Let's look at Sultai. Then you go over to look at Sultai, you look at your blue, oh, we have a great match. And then you meet, pair all those things up, and you have your base of your deck. And then after all that's done, once you figure out whatever your base trio is, because that's basically what every seal deck's going to want to look like as a base trio, once you figure that out, then go back and examine your mana, examine what you can possibly splash, examine how many banners you should be playing, etc. But really, try to focus in on whatever guild you can piece together, have the best mana for, and is just the strongest, and go from there. Don't, because if you try to tackle everything at once and you're looking at all kinds of piles and cards, it can really get overwhelming and you'll run out of time very easily. So just try to focus on what matters, and then regarding any individual sealed pool, they are going to be quite different, as Adam said. Some amount of time you're going to end up with, you know, 20 Sultai and Abzan cards and enough mana fixing. You just play a four-color deck and it's perfect and you don't have to think about it. And another time you're going to end up with three of each playable wedge and then a bunch of mono-colored cards and it's like, okay, do I build a two-color deck? It can get really confusing. So it's kind of best just to have a plan, a singular plan, go in, look at everything from one direction, and then once you get that accomplished, then start picking up the pieces and figure out all the little trickle-down stuff.
So I have a question for you, kind of a follow-up to that. So one of my experiences recently with heavily multicolored, probably the closest comparison to this kind of density of multicolor and mana fixing together was full Ravnica block.
See, original or Return to Ravnica?
Return to Ravnica, sure. Most recently. Yes. And one of the things I found when I was building Sealed is that, Dragonflies had a really powerful cards. They were great. They were always great multicolor cards for the guilds from the two packs, and it was always spread out fairly well because obviously all the guilds are the two guilds are separated in the two different packs, so you're just getting so much multicolor. And I always found it helpful to start with my mana fixing first. Like, what's the best mana fixing I have, and just doing a gut check of is that among the better decks that I have available? Do I have powerful cards to match up with that? I found when I didn't have when I would find a powerful deck, but I didn't have the mana fixing. You know, it's one of those trade-offs where I'm much less likely to be greedy if I can play a good mana base.
I absolutely agree with that for Return to Ravnica, and to a certain extent with this format. The thing was in Return to Ravnica, when you played a sealed deck, you were often three colors. But you could be any combination of three colors. You could be, oh, my blue-white cards are really awesome. I get my choice of red, green, or black as my third color. Let's look at them all. Or, you know, et cetera. You can go down the line. You could basically match any two things. You had a ton of variation, so mana fixing was extremely important, because if you had really, really strong mana fixing for one particular trio, then you would naturally want to be in that. But because cons pulls that focus in and only really gives you five color combination possibilities because they're guaranteed locked-in trios, like, the chances you want to be banned are so slim that you could basically ignore it. Like, you're not going to want to be banned. That's just not a thing. There's not enough rewards for it. You'd be missing out on all kinds of awesome, sweet, powerful triple-cost cards, like charms, and it would just be a bad move. So, because the format naturally already funnels you into basically one of five options, I think you can absolutely start looking at your mana fixing, but a newer player, a player that doesn't really understand how to evaluate mana fixing, isn't really going to know how many points to add on to their starting score from their mana fixing. Like, okay, I have two gain life dual lands, a single tri land, and a fetch land versus two tri lands and a gain life land in Sultai. So do I play the Abzan with those four fixers or the Sultai with the three fixers and the two tri-lands? I don't know which one of these is even better, much less which one of these are better in the composition of my cards altogether. So if you're able to tackle that, if you're able to mentally figure out and come up with an idea, absolutely go for it. But I think because you already are given so much information with you're going to be one of these five things, I think looking at those five things and then figuring out, even if you only have two mana fixers like in your Abzan deck or whatever, you could still pull off a random like
5/5/6 two mana fixer type mana base, and like you're going to be able to do some stuff with it. It's not going to be atrocious, and the chances of you getting two mana fixers are very low. So I think looking at the wedges themselves first is not as bad as it would be in something like Ravnica, where if you just look at your colors first and not your fixing, you could build an awesome tricolor deck and have like no fixing for it, and it'd be completely out of the water.
Okay.
Sorry if I got a little long-winded there, but basically, I think that the designers themselves took a special, like, kind of handhold approach to this particular format, and the triple color cards are so powerful and so obvious that you really, like in drafts, you really get committed to a triple color really quickly, and I think that's good. I think it helps new players a lot when you get a random Mardu charm or whatever, like, and then you draft all Mardu cards from there on out, like, you're going to have a reasonable deck. Even if your mana is completely terrible, too, you have things like Morph that are going to let you still have plays, the Banner is going to let you have plays, so it's not like you're doing absolutely nothing. But I think the format is actually relatively forgiving, given how hard multicolor formats generally are.
So let's take that to the extreme and switch paces from Sealed here. One of the decks that that always comes up in these kind of formats, people always talk about it. I know Jacob Van Leeuwen talked about it recently on Gathering Magic, because he's a maniac and loves these kind of decks. He honed in on talking about basically the five-color value deck. And that's something you've said that you've enjoyed a lot. What are your thoughts on that? Like in draft, you know, is it something that's more or less accessible given the mana fixing and the morphs that you've seen? You know, just what's the Conley take on going five color value?
Well, first of all, in Sealed, you generally want to avoid five color unless the world of mana fixing is available to you, because the way Sealed is, you'll get a ton of mana fixing, but it generally won't be distributed in such a way that'll let you play all five colors. Like, you'll have three blue-white lands, one green-black land, two red-green lands, and it's like, can you play all five colors off that? Probably not. However, you have a pretty solid, you know, green-red-white deck or whatever. The way that draft works, straggling mana fixing. So anytime, the way I like to draft this format is anytime there's a pick where there's nothing in the pack that I'm too excited about, or I don't really know what I want to take, if there's mana fixing in the pack, regardless of what colors they are, I will take that mana fixing. And what this allows you to do, if you're drafting normally, is you're taking kind of a gamble. It's like, okay, I took a blue-black dual land. If I end up in Sultai, that's like pretty sweet. Let's see if I get there. Okay, I ended up in Sultai, I got a free dual land out of the deal, when otherwise I would have had a wasted random pick that I wouldn't have played. That's great. That's kind of like the level one. However, when you start drafting five-color, all those random pickups of lands that you should pick up all the time, basically, because there's a 10 common lands, which is a crap load, 5 uncommon lands, 5 common banners that you should just randomly pick up, like when there's 3 and 4 cards left in the pack, and you're like, oh, I don't know what to take, just take the banner. Like, it's certainly worth more than, you know, Fog something or whatever. I don't even know what Tangram's Scheming or anything like that. Just take the mana fixing, and then you end up with a 5-color deck, you end up with just all this random, you know, 5 or 6 pieces of mana fixing throughout the draft, not to mention the stuff that you're first picking, the tri-lands that you're willing to, like, go out of your way to get. And so you end up with this really strong base of fixing, usually centered around green or at least a wedge in particular. Like, you'll be black, red, white base, and 90% of your cards will be black, red, white. But you'll be splashing for, like, the 2 insane green cards you found and the 1 insane blue card. And so then your deck looks like a Mardu deck, except you strip away, let's say, 5 or 6 of the basics that you would normally have. You replace them with dual lands, so you replace Mountain with a tri-land that taps for red, blue, and white, and now all of a sudden you have what is effectively a dual land in your deck already, because it produces both red and white, and produces blue, quote-unquote, for free. So, at the cost of coming into play tapped, I guess, so it's not really free. But all of a sudden, by letting this land come into play tapped, you've changed your Mountain into something that starts letting you cast blue, and you pick this land up just kind of like as a freebie during the draft. So when you get enough of those going on, all of a sudden the couple green cards and the blue card you found, they easily fit into your show at the cost of a couple lands coming to play tapped, and the power level of your spells goes up dramatically. Instead of having random filler like, you know, +1/+0 draw a card for one mana, instead of having that, you have some other charm, an Abzan charm that you otherwise wouldn't play because you didn't have green if you stayed three colors, for example. So basically, it's a slightly riskier strategy in that you need to develop a mana base simultaneously to developing your spell base, but it pays off in spades if you assemble those two things together because you just have a much more powerful deck. And so the skill of drafting five colors is basically knowing how to balance your what spells you're getting with your mana fixing, and that's something you only can learn with a little bit of time. But basically, quick breakdown is any ridiculous bomb you take over everything, you know, your rares that your end hostilities, anything like that. Just below that is sweepers of any type. So I prefer like you know, the infest that you gain one life. I don't know the name of that card, but infest, you gain one life for each creature dies. Anything like that. You take those very highly because sweepers are very important to the deck. And then below that is the premier mana fixing, so your tri-lands, basically. And then below that is removal and strong cards. And then right below that is all other mana fixing. And then below that is everything else, basically. So, like, random creatures, random defenders, weak removal, anything is basically less valuable than mana fixing. So it's just one of those things to kind of keep in mind. You have to change the way you draft a little bit because you generally, when you draft, you don't even think about mana. When you're drafting a random red-green deck in M15, you're not thinking about how many dual lands can I get. But it's a very valuable skill to have in this format. So also, we're going to be changing the name of our podcast to Limited Resources.
I don't think I would want to sully that name. So follow-up question. So that sounds really exciting. You know, coming as a player that that admittedly does not have as much skill. I typically lean on more focused aggressive decks. Like, I'm much happier guaranteeing a great curve, good removal, kind of like the classical bread type approach. So, like, formats like M15, where bread, you know, the typical two-color bread decks work out well, you know, I generally find are a lot more fun for me than these multicolored formats. So the five-color deck sounds great. Like, great, all my spells are going to be better on average, my mana is fixed. What's the drawback? Like, what's the pitfall where, you know, when you, if you think that you want to do this, when shouldn't you?
I mentioned earlier the sweeper thing. In Shards, it was basically make or break. I drafted five color control, I would say 98% of the time. I 6-0'd my first Pro Tour drafting five color control both times, and also drafted in the top 8 of that Pro Tour and had easily what I would consider the best deck. If you're interested in going back and looking at it, it's Pro Tour Honolulu 2009. My deck is absurd. It has Caldera Hellion and Lava Lange in it. Two rare board sweepers that I got lucky to open. It also had an Armillary Sphere that I got like 8th pick in Pack 2. Great mana fixing. My win conditions were kind of weak, but the great thing about Shards were that all the cards had cycling, so you actually didn't need really strong win conditions. I had like some 7 mana 6/4s, which don't sound all that exciting, but when you're killing the board with everything you have and you have a million removal spells, it doesn't really matter what you're winning with. That was the beauty of the format. But unfortunately, I got I was up 2-0 against Michael Hebke in the semifinals after beating Brian Kibler in the quarterfinals. And then kind of got really unlucky. I never drew any of my sweepers, never drew Avalanche, never drew Branching Bolt against his Bant deck. And then he had one Bant Charm as his only removal in his whole deck, and he drew it in game 3 to blow up my Armillary Sphere on turn 2 when I led with Mountain, so I couldn't mana fix, which was huge. And then he like had something else in game 4 that was brutal, but it basically ended up coming back and beating me. That's fine. But the most important thing for me in that format in 5 color was a sweeper. And there was a ton of them. There was Volcanic Fallout, there was Infest, there was Jund Charm, there was obviously the rare ones that I just mentioned, Caldera Hellion, Lavalanche, what was the name of the Nevi's Disc, the new Nevi's Disc? It was white one. I'm sure you guys played in Commander all the time.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
White 3 or something.
Yeah, it destroyed like everything.
Sun something?
But artifacts.
Yeah, destroys all non-artifact, basically, things. And it was, like, there was all kinds of that stuff. So basically, if you ever picked up a sweeper, and remember, this was Shards was the first set where there was Mythic Rares, right? I believe it was. So most of these sweepers I'm talking about, Sands, Lavalanche, were just rare, so they actually came up fairly often. And then all the other ones were uncommon. So if you once you picked up a sweeper, you were kind of golden, because what you had to do is you had to stave off the super aggressive. There was a lot of 3-2s for 2 mana, a lot of things like that. You just needed to like be like, hold on, kill your stupid exalted creatures, kill your stupid tokens, whatever you're doing. Let's settle down. Let's reset the game on turn 4, and now I'll play with my insane value removal, and I'll 2-for-1 you for the rest of the game and beat you. But you needed that way to kind of reset things, get your 4-for-1 or your 3-for-1, and just like, you know, take a chill pill. Mostly because the card advantage in that format that was draw-based was a little slower and a little more expensive. This format doesn't have nearly the same number of sweepers, unfortunately. You're looking at basically 2 uncommon ones, and then the rest are rare. I still think they are extremely important to the archetype, but because they are so infrequent, you almost can't like put yourself in a situation where you're relying on getting one, otherwise your deck might just completely collapse. But that is certainly a risk you are taking when you draft 5-color. Like, the way Shards was, I wanted to get a sweeper and then move into 5-color. So I would get a 3rd-pick sweeper, a 4th-pick sweeper, a 1st-pick sweeper, etc. And then I'd be like, okay, this is my reassurance, I'm 5-color, let's go. And I knew to look out for that, so it happened. In this format, you almost have to take the gamble of like, okay, I'm going to be 5-color, and I'm going to hope at some point in the draft that, you know, black-green, -2/-2 your team or whatever shows up, because otherwise my deck has a glaring weakness in it that I just know is going to exist, and it's one of those things you kind of have to, like, put your head in the sand and hope for. So that's an extreme weakness. Also, if you end up with too little mana fixing, your deck can just be complete poop. That's why I said focusing in on one wedge as your base colors is pretty important. That way, if you fall short and don't get quite the mana fixing for your 4th and 5th colors that you want, you can play a bad version of your 3-color deck and just jam a couple of semi-playables into that 21st, 22nd, 23rd card slot and have like a couple of, you know, weaker cards there. Maybe they're a 3-6 for 6 mana or something, like something you wouldn't normally want to play. But they work, they let you play a stronger mana base and let you have a game plan. So that's the beauty of kind of drafting 85 to 90% of your cards in that base 3-color wedge, is that those extra colors, if your fixing doesn't fall out, you can just drop them. But that's certainly a disaster that could happen as well. It is 100% a risky strategy if you've never done it before. However, once you've done it enough times, you start to kind of know what to look for, and the risk starts to fade away a little bit. There'll always be some element of risk to it. I mean, every draft deck has some element of risk to it. So,
yeah, I just looked up your deck from that top 8, and there's like Caldera, Hellion, Lavalanche, a ton of ways to.
Branching Bolt, Charm.
Branching Bolt, 2 Crystallization, a Dark Temper, Fiery Fall, which I assume was mana fixing.
Yeah, fire. It was really good in that form. It was 6 mana, 5 damage in the late game, or mana fixing early, which is awesome.
Yeah, Grixis Charm, and Volcanic Submersion.
Oh, yeah, the Submersion was insane for me. I blew up, like, one of Kibler's artifacts when something that, or his, like, mana-based, he, like, played a border post and I blew it up or something. But I was always willing to play slightly underpowered cards like Volcanic Submersion, and this kind of translates into this format, so I'll make a quick note of it. Cycling in that format was extremely powerful because you got to play some niche cards that weren't things you would necessarily want to play in your main deck, but had very powerful effects. Volcanic Submersion was one of these things. It was 5 mana, destroy an artifact or a land. That doesn't sound too exciting. Keep in mind, however, that one of the 3 wedges or shards in that format was Esper, which was an artifact-based set, so there was a higher concentration of artifacts than normal. In addition to that, a lot of the mana fixing was artifact-based, and some decks just had really weak mana bases, so just blowing up a land would sometimes be valuable. However, you could certainly imagine that 5 mana blow up an artifact or land could just be a completely dead card in a lot of matchups. This particular card had 2 mana, cycle it, which is just insane for a 5-color deck because I get to occasionally draw it in the niche scenario where it's insane, and I beat Brian Kibler 1 game just flat out by casting Volcanic Submersion. You can watch it on video. So sometimes that will happen, and every other time where that's not convenient for you, you pay 2 mana and throw it away, and it kind of increases the land count in your deck by a little bit, theoretically, because you're going down one card in your deck, so now your 17 lands is in a 39-card deck as opposed to 17 lands in a 40-card deck. So you're theoretically drawing a slightly higher concentration of mana when you do that, and you are you're mana fixing in a way because you're turning a spell that would normally be red into now a colorless effect and then drawing a random card. So it was a very powerful thing in that format. In this format, cycling obviously doesn't exist. However, Morph does a very similar thing. You take powerful gold cards, which 5-color has access to every single one, which is beautiful. You put 3 colorless mana into it, and all of a sudden you get a 2-2, which is great because that's large enough and early enough that you can use it as a defensive creature early to make sure you don't die to aggro, which is nice. And then in the late game, once you get your 5, 6, 7 mana, you start unmorphing those guys, and they have gigantic, powerful bodies, powerful effects, and they almost feel like spells in a certain way. Like, when you hit somebody with a 4-4 lifelink just once, like, that's almost like you cast a spell. So even though you're a more creature-heavy version of 5-color control, you're still getting a lot of value out of your creatures. So obviously, the 3-4 lover does a lot of value in terms of spell-like qualities. The guy that gets +3/+0, like I said, they all kind of have, like, this little element that gives you some value. And I think that that particular strategy of 5-color control is completely viable.
I like it. I'm not sold on drafting 5-color. I think
it's certainly not something.
It's not for me.
It's certainly not something you should just do all the time. Like I did it in Charge all the time because I had a lot of success with it, and I knew at the table I was going to be the person who knew how to do it the best. So if there was ever somebody I was competing with, I would figure out what to do to save myself. However, in this format, like I said, you certainly want to test the waters. You want to get your toes wet and be a little more cautious about it. Don't like make it your primary way, but it is a viable strategy.
So, somebody who, you know, let's say their first experience of Magic was pretty like Magic 2015, or they just went to the cons pre-release and they're just beginning to settle down and look at the stuff. If you had one tip to give them, whether it's for draft or sealed, what do you think a new, you know, somebody who's unfamiliar with drafting a multicolor set should always keep in mind?
I mean, the mana is certainly the most important thing. That's a difficult thing to just say, keep in mind your mana. But it is basically mana, so run more lands than less, more mana sources. 17 lands and 2 banners is more than acceptable. Don't be cutting a land from that deck necessarily. And then just making sure you can cast your spells. It's easily the most important thing, because if you can't cast your spells in this format, you're just losing out on the value of all these powerful 3-mana spells, and you're just not going to have a good time. Like, I could tell you to draft a 2-color deck and have fun playing a bunch of monocolored dirtles, but you're kind of missing out on the fun that is cons, which is multicolored sweet stuff. So basically, don't be afraid to take mana fixing highly. Don't feel like you wasted a pick. A lot of people will take a land and they'll feel bad because you're getting a land at the end of the draft. That is not something you should feel bad about. Lands are not only great for the draft, but after the draft you get to keep them, and they're great for building your constructive mana bases with, especially the tri-lands, which we'll definitely see a ton of play in constructive. I would just say mana is not a bad thing. It's not something to worry about. Play a lot of it, make sure you can cast your spells, and you'll be happy.
I like it. So, let's change gears a little bit.
Sure.
So let's say you're not going to Grand Prix Orlando.
But I am.
Let's say you're not. Let's say you're not going to Grand Prix Orlando, and...
Why would I not go to Orlando, though? Did I stub my toe? Like, why would I...
Maybe it's a misery-like situation, and your number one fan has you tied to a bed and broke your knees. So you can't
That's
go.
A creepy fan. Number one fan, if you're listening to this, please do not break my knees and tie me to a bed. That would be very rude.
And if you do, please make sure you send photos to MTG Potpourri.
No!
We want to see that if you do it.
You do not want to see with broken knees.
Conley, shut up. How do you think we'll help you?
Alright, anyway, assuming I didn't go to GP Orlando.
Assume you're not going to GP Orlando. Instead, you're at home.
Okay.
If you're I'm trying to think of the best way to put this. So for somebody who's at home and is looking for some magical entertainment, what should they do?
Turn on the broadcast of GP Orlando?
Well, sure. You can do that.
Okay, you can pre-release draft on Magic Online.
That's a pretty good idea, too.
I don't know what you're fishing for here, buddy. I'm trying to... These are all things that happened that weekend. You could... watch somebody else stream?
Yes. You can watch somebody else stream.
I don't know why you would watch someone else stream over watching GP Orlando, though, because it's much higher quality, I would imagine.
Sure. Yeah. The premier event coverage of the weekend will always outshine random streamer guy. What I want to talk a little bit about is streaming. You know, Tom's been looking at getting into streaming. He's got a really sweet deck he kind of wants to talk about and show off and do the very Tom thing that he likes to do. I, however, have a very different motive in mind. I'd like to get into streaming a little bit and kind of show off some Commander and do some cool community building type stuff where, you know, I take a bunch of individually random, not so good cards and make an individually not so random, slightly better deck from them.
Sounds like a selfish goal to me. Okay.
Commander. I just want to build cool decks with everyone's help. Like, I guess that's selfish. Sure. But you, Conley, you've done some quite a bit of streaming. You've filmed your own drafts and videos and things like that. So you're kind of like the resident expert here.
I mean, there's only two of us on the call, so I guess if one of us has to be the expert, I suppose yes, I am more expert than you.
By default.
If one of us dies and we need a doctor, though, we unfortunately, our veterinarian is not here.
Yeah. So while I'm desperately trying not to choke on just breathing basic air.
If you choked on kibbles and bits, though, we'd probably know how to save you.
Yes. If I ever eat dog food and choke, I know who to call.
Tom, this is what you get for not being on the podcast right now. You get made fun of, just so you know when you're editing this.
Oh, it's daughters. We can't make that much fun of them. Yes, we can. So streaming. So, you know, it's something that's growing. A lot of services, you know, PlayStation Network, Xbox Live, you know, both of the new next-gen consoles that came out last year, the Xbox One, PlayStation 4, they have basically instant-on streaming capability available. The barrier, there's free software, the community is developing, building, and it's getting better and better every month that's out there. So anybody, if you want to start streaming content and kind of sharing the experience of your gaming, whether it's Magic Online or other games, the bar is getting lower and lower. It's easier and easier to do. As someone who's done some streaming before, what are some of the kind of the rookie mistakes that are out there? Like, what are some easy things that people don't necessarily think about or don't learn until they kind of get a couple runs under their belt?
Okay, well, mistake number one is not realizing how much is going on when you stream and not allocating the proper resources on your computer to being prepared for that. So if you have a window running Pandora in the background, and you have, you know, your League of Legends client open and your Sims City 95,000, and then also your Magic Online and your OBS, your stream, whether you realize it or not, your computer could be looking completely fine. Your stream is probably going to be extremely choppy and stuttering, and your some viewers will see it, some viewers won't. Other viewers have extremely powerful computers and internet connections like you might just see everything completely fine. But the majority of your audience who has worse computers than you, worse internet connections, and worse bandwidth is going to have extremely choppy, bad feeds. And sure, there are some solutions for them, such as they can lower their resolution down to ridiculous levels, but Magic is a game where reading cards and reading the board is extremely complicated, and when you start blurring things out and making even basic text not readable, that becomes very difficult. So when you do streaming, make sure that you properly just get your computer in stream mode. Close every program that doesn't need to be involved in streaming. Make sure the programs you do need involved for streaming all have easy access during the stream. You don't necessarily want to be videotaping because for the new Magic Online, you have to do screen share, basically. So you're going to be showing your entire desktop, or at least a region of your desktop. So try to have every vital thing that could be important to you, whether it's your Twitter, so you can send tweets about your stream, whether it's your dashboard, anything that's important that you don't want other people viewing during your stream, have it off to a small section of your desktop that you do not have screen capture on. This includes anything where, like, your personal emails or anything where you're putting a password or anything. Make sure you drag it to a section off of the screen share, because you don't want to be filming and doing that and showing that to everybody. So that's important to remember. But mostly it's just a matter of having something to offer. So you playing Magic is great, you playing League of Legends is great, but why should somebody be watching you over watching someone else? Remember that if your chances are of getting into streaming, you're probably not a big name personality or anything, so they don't have any like background to know why they should be there. So you have to kind of have some gimmick, some draw, some style. Maybe you just have a really consistent schedule and you show up 3 hours every single day and they're the same hours and everyone knows where to meet you. Maybe you have cool logos everywhere and stuff like that. Maybe you play the best music. Whatever it is, have a reason for people to keep coming back to your stream, because there are hundreds of random streamers, and for people to pick you and to consistently watch you is actually it's a sign of honor and respect in some ways, because they have all these options and they're choosing you. So kind of reward those people. Make sure you give back to them. Make sure you like I said, just have something to offer and be social. Make sure some people will just be very, very quiet. Maybe that's your thing, though. You know, some people enjoy turning into streams and where the person doesn't talk and there's just music playing and they just get to watch a kind of really chill game of Magic. There's not any one right way to do it. It's just do your thing, do it better than anybody else, and enjoy it.
So what are your thoughts on kind of modes of entertainment? So everybody, you know, obviously audiences and viewerships all have their own opinions. So like the audience that really enjoys watching Magic, I think, and will spend like all day Saturday watching 12 hours of Magic, I think has a different perspective on what Magic content should be involved with streaming or in coverage than somebody who just wants to tune in for like the top eight or the finals, you know, or somebody that's just cruising through and has like an hour to watch a little bit of Magic at the Pro Tour and then tunes back out again. So you know, within like a games audience, you can get a wide variety of opinions and requests and desires. So I'm just going to kind of shoot from my hip. Like some of the things that I've seen that I've really enjoyed are kind of like tops. For lack of a better term, but if you've seen like comic book crossovers, you kind of get what's going on. So like if for example, Conley, like let's say you know, like you played a little bit of League of Legends, right?
Yeah.
So let's say I started picking up League of Legends and I'm streaming some of it. Like maybe one night you hop on in for just, you know, a half hour, 45 minutes, something like that. You kind of hop on a Skype call, hop into the same game with me. And we kind of have like a back and forth banter like this, but it's live. Like I like that kind of stuff. Like seeing somebody, especially somebody who's never played a game before, playing with somebody who's played it a lot more. That type of dynamic and kind of talking about like what's going on in the game, and it kind of gives somebody who's typically not in a position to feel like an expert, feel like one or more of one. You know, I think it's always good to see that. And the other thing that I've seen, and I enjoy it a little bit less because I'm just super unlucky, is giveaway stuff. So like I love that there's these like chat bots that log how many minutes users have been watching like a stream on Twitch. And like the longer they're watching, like the more points they get, and the more points you have, like the easier it is to like win giveaway stuff. And whether you're being sponsored or not, like just from like going to Magic tournaments, like you just randomly pick up swag. Like, I've got playmats and deck boxes and all sorts of random promotional materials, you know, like Ultra Pro's given me stuff at Gen Con and Max Protection, they've given me stuff at events before. I have all this stuff, and it's, like, way more than I know what to do with, and so that's one of the things that I'm going to try to do is just give some things away and kind of, you know, people that help me out or maybe provide good feedback or tips or support, you know, like you said, kind of reward them for it. So I don't know, like, what are things that have kind of like jived with you, or maybe things that you've tried that have been successful to kind of help keep things kind of spiced up?
I've never done any giveaways, mostly because I don't stream often enough to really do that. It's kind of a more of an exception. You don't want to be like, you don't want to feel like you're buying your viewers. So like, it's not like tune in and every day you'll get, I don't even know. Like, you kind of want to make it a special thing, or like, you know, once every couple hours. You don't want people just viewing you because you're going to give them something. I would feel kind of bad about that. I wouldn't enjoy it. So I've never done giveaways. I try to introduce a lot of new music to people. I'm a big music person, so I listen to a lot of stuff that other people are not familiar with or have never heard, but it's quite good, and a lot of people tend to like it, so I tend to try to showcase anything that's new or give a little explanation about it. I make sure I have a song ticker on my stream, even though that half the replays they show these days won't even play audio because of the music thing. I at least try to inform people like who these artists are, where they can go find the music, etc., because I value that a lot. And it doesn't really take much effort either, which is nice. It's not like a thing that I have to broadcast or anything. I try to keep my streams pretty comical and funny, but that's just the person I am. Obviously, that's not a necessity for everybody, but generally in my videos and stuff like that, I try to keep things a little more light. Obviously, I talk quite a bit, which is good to fill in kind of gaps of silence and stuff like that, so people who like to be engaged a little more, who like to learn a little bit more about the game and whatnot, will tune into my stream over somebody like Michael Jacob, who will go long periods of time without talking, etc. Sometimes on my streams it'll be late at night and I'll just want to kind of like chill and not want to talk, and I'll just not say anything, but there's generally the exception for me.
So, other than yourself, because obviously you're really good and you would watch yourself if you could, like, who's kind of a streamer that you enjoy watching? Whether it's Magic Online or not, just somebody who's out there, you know, streaming and doing some awesome stuff.
Sure. I watch significantly more League of Legends streams than I do Magic Online, partially because they're generally work with my schedule a little bit more when I want to be watching streams. I love to watch people like I'm a Cutie Pie, who's a great entertainer when it comes to League of Legends. He's kind of a laid-back dude and just has a really funny stream. So I love watching that kind of stuff. When it comes to Magic Online, I don't get to watch a ton of streams consistently, but I try to watch people like LSV or Cheon or Ifro occasionally when they stream. I generally watch the big tournament streams, the GP streams and SCG streams. Those usually just be like on in the background somewhere when I'm doing whatever. But I don't really get to consistently like sit down every night and watch like an hour of Magic stream, partially because I don't want to, just because I find it super frustrating to watch a stream of somebody who's worse than me. No offense to those people, but I just to watch their plays and just go like, how the hell could you possibly make that play? Like, there's no way you're gonna win this game, and also to have very little control over it is extremely infuriating for me. So I'd rather watch like games where I get neither player's thoughts, like a Grand Prix stream where it's like, sure, they're both making mistakes, but like it's still an interesting, you know, thing to watch, as opposed to like, here's one player's perspective, watch him stumble through the turns and make a bunch of decisions you wouldn't make. And that personally for me is frustrating, although I understand that for the majority of people they wouldn't have that problem. But I basically watch streams to learn more about the game, to be a little entertained, sure, but I want to see something new and exciting when I watch a Magic stream, just because, you know, the same old run-of-the-mill stuff I experience every day, so.
Okay. I'm not as big on watching streaming. Like, I'm actually big on, like, TV and a lot of movies and things like that in general. I find it really hard to watch a show for a long time, so getting into streaming is really tough for me. Even, like, Grand Prix coverage, like, Pro Tour coverage when I'm not there, like, oftentimes I find myself kind of tuning in and out, like, even though I really want to watch, like, I want to know who wins, but I just don't want to wait through it, sure. It feels like. But there are a couple streamers that I've really enjoyed. One that I've kind of gotten into a little recently is Admiral Baru. He does Destiny and Borderlands 2, soon to be Borderlands the pre-sequel. Borderlands is a game that I've gotten into. I've really enjoyed it. Just really a lot of fun. Just genuinely fun first-person shooter and team co-op shooting stuff. It's great. So he, you know, he's definitely like a game breaker. Likes to push the edges, likes to figure out the ways to kind of get around the edges and kind of shows you how to do it. And he's got a regular group of guys that he plays with. So he always has people on the stream. And there's always banter going back and forth. They find a lot of comical and fun things to do. So I found that entertaining. And the other one is when I do get a chance to watch Magic and it's like a random night of the week. One guy that I don't see as much anymore was Kenji Ikushara, not the Nummy.
He did
every day.
Yeah,
did like a year of streaming every day, so it was like great. It was just like I could just randomly tune in, and hey, there was Kenji, and it was really sweet because he's entertaining and funny. He had a good overlay on his screen, and he made good use of using images and icons and things like that. The music was usually pretty tolerable. Sometimes that's like a big difference for me is I just don't want this music on for the next 3 hours. So that's I'm a little picky in particular, but you know, there's things out there for me. So, and I think we're not going to have a Tom.
We're not, and I have a team call in about 8 minutes.
So
team call for Pro Tour Honolulu 2014.
This
is my third
Pro Tour Honolulu.
Wow, that's great, Conley. It's still my zeroth.
Oh well, at least there's the upcoming one that you'll get to like walk on the beach and stuff, right?
What beach? Which Pro Tour?
There's one in like a week and a half. You'll be there enjoying the beach and getting a tan, enjoying the pina colada.
You're such a jerk.
What?
So I'm not going to Pro Tour Honolulu. I was not asked.
You do coverage though, right? Like
I do, but I don't do coverage for everything.
You're just not the Hawaii type. I get it. I understand.
Yeah.
You just wouldn't like it there.
It's all right. I think I've got one on you though, Conley. This is in the back pocket, and I've been waiting to whip it out.
No, I don't know what this is. But...
All right. I will, however, be going to World's Week in Nice, France.
I see. Well, I've been to France like 4 or 5 times now, and I don't like it, so I'm glad I'm not going.
Well, forget you. I love it. So I took French in college and high school. I've really, really come to enjoy French cuisine and food. Not so much necessarily their culture, but Nice is in the southeastern area of France. It's like a vacation type area within the country. A lot of Mediterranean influences, some Spanish, some of that going on. It's a really interesting, interesting place from everything that I understand from over here. So I'm excited to go. The flights are horrendous, and I have no status on in the airline except for Southwest, which means I'm going to be in horrendous flights no matter what. But I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a really good show. I don't know a world championship. Since it was in Seattle, the first the kind of after they rebooted Worlds and did like the 6-player or the 12-player tournament, and now it's like
sure.
24 players. It's a little bigger this year.
I haven't been to World since the last World.
Well, I was there at the last Worlds
in San Francisco.
That was when you just went off and
people's faces.
It was unreal. Especially
I didn't win the tournament, so
you didn't win the tournament, but beating Wesco was awesome.
He deserved it, so I don't even feel bad.
Well, without any comment on that one way or another, just the intensity and showmanship.
We're teammates these days,
right? I would hope that would be friendly, but it was one of those classic Magic moments. Like, if you want to look at something that can be inspiring to a player, where it's like. You know, the kind of the Marshall Sutcliffe philosophy limit, just like never give up, always look for the way, always play to your outs. That match had a really good representation of it. Yeah, I think it's just one of those classical things where, like, you know, 10 years from now, we'll still look back on that match, and it's going to be one of those really cool moments where, you know, match, they asked from the booth who thinks you know, Conley's going to win, and, like, nobody raised any hands, and then there was that turn, and just the sequence of events and the way he played it out, and it won the crowd over, and it was just one of those moments where, like, when you were there watching, whether you were there or you were watching on the stream, people got into it.
Yeah.
So.
No, that was certainly one of the more proud moments I've had playing Magic, so I definitely...
So I don't... So you won't be at Worlds. I know that.
I'll be at Worlds.
All the teams are locked up, and all the Pro Tour champions have been selected. So this Pro Tour, if you do win the next one, would feed you into the following year's Worlds. So I am looking forward to seeing you next year, I hope.
Oh, I'll be there. It's already a lock.
Great.
Well, I got to get going, enjoying my team for the Pro Tour. We'll have to leave Tom on the sidelines for this one because he's a big lazy bum.
Sorry, so someone wants to get at you, Conley. How can they do that?
You can get at me via Twitter, at Conley81 on Twitter. You can find my stream at also the same thing, twitch.tv/Conley81. Content on channelfireball.com and tcgplayer.com, including an entire set review from Cons of Tarkir. So if you're interested in learning about all the individual cards and their ratings, you can go check out my full review on tcgplayer.com. And that's it for me.
I'm Adam Sporsky. You can find me on Twitter at @the_Stybs, STYBS. I'm the content manager for Gathering Magic, so Stybs@GatheringMagic.com is a great way to email me. I also write Command Tower every Thursday on Daily MTG, the official Magic the Gathering website. So if you like Commander, if you like Popper Cube stuff, if you like curmudgeonly statements about the world, I have all of that.
If you like pina coladas and getting caught in the rain.
Oh, that's Tom's. That's Tom's bag. Oh. No way am I taking that one. But this has been MTG Potpourri. Thanks for joining.
Peace.